Professor Brené Brown's research shows that vulnerability fosters good emotional and mental health. It is a sign of courage. We become more resilient and brave when we embrace who we truly are and what we are feeling. The Vulnerable Scientist Podcast is a space for scientists to tell their honest and authentic stories. I am your host, Sarah Nyakeri, who happens to be a scientist, informal science communicator, and I help scientists create personal websites. If you want to support this show, go to www.patreon.com/thevulnerablescientist. You can also follow this podcast on all social media platforms at TV Scientist Pod.
Yeah. Was it different? How different was it, education?
Education-wise, I could say, in terms of practicals, I learned a lot. Because even like when you think of a Bachelor of Science degree in a Kenyan institution, how many times did you actually sit in the practicals and finish everything and write a report before you called on like some old school, someone who was in the same course ahead of you to show you what they did, you know? But then,
Okay, you're lost.
Hey.
I hope you're not getting annoyed with this thing.
No, I'm quite patient. I'm on holiday.
Okay. So that's good.
So I was saying, like, in our usual programs in Kenya, at Kenyatta University, you go through your theoretical classes and then you're required to report to the lab and do some practical and write a report.
Yeah.
90% of the students will probably just skip the practical or sit back at the practical and chat on their phone and then ask someone else who had done the course the previous year to show them the report, and they can repurpose that and submit and pass.
To repurpose.
Just being civil here. So, and then you get to these institutions abroad and you realize that the practical they did last year is just a guide to help you do another practical this year. It's never the same.
Same, yeah.
So you have to sit and do it. You have to do it. So you get to now instill that the culture of actually doing more than just cramming things and then you cram and then you put them back on the examination paper, you know. So that's quite a big difference. And the other one is, I think it humbles you in a sense that you get into this space whereby you for example, we studied with some guys who are like big shots in Kenya, and then you go abroad and then you're suddenly moving from your government procured four-wheel drive, your Prado, to a bicycle, you know. So then suddenly you, the I don't know, manager of whatever, and the guy that went to Nairobi Pathology, you are equally on a bicycle and you know, fighting for second hand stuff, because if you lie to yourself that you're gonna afford fresh out of the supermarket stuff, you're not going to afford it. You will be broke within a first month. It doesn't matter. I mean, there are a few exceptions. I mean, we have ministers' kids out here, and they actually receive school fees from Kenya, which is the opposite of what everybody else does, is earn here and send money to Kenya, you know. But in most cases, if you're in Europe, the fees by itself, you're paying like what, 2 million per year as a master's program.
Which money?
2 million Kenya shillings.
Oh.
So if you're paying 20,000 euros to just tuition, and then rent is waiting for you calculated per week, you know. So you're probably paying another 56. You're paying your current rent for a single room.
Wow.
You know, things add up pretty fast, and then you can't afford. I mean, even if you afford it, you can't afford to be using like a taxi or anything all the time. You have to get on the bicycle and get on with it. So it's humbling. It teaches you another perspective. Like there is this other side of life that people just particularly don't think about. And when you meet these people in Nairobi again, they're like in parliament. I know two of them that we met, and they are already in parliament representing their constituents. You can see the difference. The head of like environmental staff at the city hall, that lady, she was at Wageningen, and we used to chat. You know, you meet them and you're like, so what did you learn at Wageningen that you've implemented? And you can see these programs. So it gives you a different perspective, which is, I think, important in your growth and in your career as an individual.
You want to talk about being black and being in a...
I think we covered that somewhere in between when I was saying, like, when you are the black guy, that most of the time we normally have this reality where we say there is a ceiling. There is the black ceiling, and then there is the ceiling for everybody else. From, you know, you start arranging. It goes from, if you are in Australia, you will start looking for an Australian, and if you can't find that, you go through the European system, UK and then Ireland, you know, go, and then you can lower it to the US and then Europe, you know. And then if you really can't find anybody, you go through India, China, Latin America before you really looking for an African, you know, in terms of promotions and everything like that. So you have that reality that you wake up with every morning. Even professionals here, I attended this webinar by a Kenyan lady here in Australia. I think she's called Gatwere something, from, I think, Queensland, if not Melbourne. And she says she interviewed professionals, African professionals in Australia. And it's something she called being in perpetual strangerhood. In that, you know, if you are a doctor, you have this, you have a practice, and patients are supposed to come and be treated irrespective of who is treating them. So at first, the patients will be preferring to go away from you, a trained and experienced doctor. And they would rather be treated by a white intern than a qualified and experienced black doctor.
Well,
so, and it cuts across all the other departments. I mean, I thank God that you get to gain some of these experiences, and you tell yourself, I'm trained enough that nobody is going to undermine my experience. They can look at me however they want, but my expertise and my knowledge stays. And when I'm contributing and I'm not interrupting anybody, then y'all better sit and listen to what I have to say, and then rebut with scientific facts. You know?
Yeah. Which you can't. So you get to
grow to that point, but then before you get there, you're in this cycle in where you are always a stranger. So that's the perpetual strangerhood.
So when she interviews?
She interviews so many expatriates from the African continent.
Country.
And the continent as a whole. So she got to interview so many of the expatriates here. So the expats actually working here, professionals. And so the theme was the same. You start with people being skeptical about what you're actually capable of. And then you because you have to work twice as much, you know, to even get that recognition. For somebody to even give you a contract and renew it, you basically worked twice as much as the next guy.
Just to prove yourself, which I don't think is right.
Yeah, it's not, but it's the reality. I mean, we tend to put too much emphasis on racism, but then we forget that human beings are discriminatory in nature. You know, you go to Kenya, forget about the color, you're all the same color, but you go to Mombasa, they'll be like, oh, you know, Jama Wabara, alipewa kazi hapa, you know, it's... it's the reality of life.
Yeah, it's true, by the way. Like,
and you go to Nairobi, they'll be asking, hey, you from Nyakemincha, what are you doing here? You know, how did you get here? So if it's not racism, there will be nepotism, there will be tribalism. Then when you are all equal and you remove all the tribes and everything, then there will be the rich and the poor. There will be who was your grandfather, you know, you are a nobody.
There's always some line.
Did your grandfather go to Oxbridge, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
So there will be that. But then these kind of things, because you've put in an effort and you've improved yourself as a scientist, as a researcher, and you naively expect a fair playing ground. And I have to be thankful that in most cases I have had a good sale and I have had good bosses. Good to the level that they actually listened to what I had to say. They interviewed me and then they gave me an opportunity to kind of present my skills and put them to work, and also to learn from the other people in the departments. Then you kind of experience some things that kind of make you almost lose your faith in humanity, you know. You get this PhD student who feels like you're shit because you can't do something like they are doing, you know. But then 2 weeks later, they can't also do something that you're doing, and they find out so quickly that, yeah, you also have your things that you're good at, you know.
Yeah.
And they don't understand. So there is that balance. You get to strike it, and you learn to live that quiet life.
What did you call
and
it?
And I guess, call what?
There's a term, stranger something.
Perpetual strangerhood.
It's perpetual strangerhood.
If you write that very thing on your browser, you might find it.
Let me see.
Yeah, it's the first thing you get up there. Perpetual strangerhood. Experiences of highly skilled African Australian professionals in the workplace. So, there it is. University of Melbourne. And the author is Dr. Kathomi Gatwere.
Oh, okay. It's actually very specific to... Okay. Yeah, I've seen it.
So that's researched work. Anyway, but beyond that, you also get to like collaborate with researchers in African institutions, and I'm happy I'm always getting those chances and to even like contribute, even advice in some data analysis or policy stuff. And those are some of the highs you get, and you get to enjoy being part of the conversation.
It's actually a last year's paper, Boundaries of Belonging, Theorizing Black African Migrant Experiences in Australia. Okay. Interesting.
So have you ever thought of, since you're already collaborating with people in the country you come from, Kenya and other places, I'm guessing, have you planned to go back to where you come from and apply whatever you've learned? And, you know.
Look, I will just be honest. I don't plan to retire here. That's the reality. But then also, I'm not in a hurry, because when I was in a hurry, I was disappointed. Because that period between me finishing my PhD and then interviewing for this with this institution in Kenya, and not really interviewing, because when I presented myself, people were not happy. They never showed up.
You are not happy.
What else would you call it when people know that you have an interview and then the individuals in the panel just disappear?
Okay.
So it means they don't want to interview you.
You said you disappear. So
you're only left. You're only left with the this esteemed professor who even suggested your name and thought that they can benefit by having you work and train with them. But then, so you've taken your flight, you've taken your taxi to this institution, you've met this. I mean, in a sense, it was a bittersweet moment, because I also got through this individual to get to meet even the director of the institution and the director of research, because then he was like, yes, I can see that all these other people are not here. So what else can we do? Let me show you around. Let me show you the people that actually matter in this. So that also shows you the determination that they had to have me be with them there for that particular interval. But so beyond that, almost everybody else disappeared. And the excuses were like, oh yeah, I realized I have to be up countries. I don't know in which institution. I realized I have to do this. And even the people I just wanted to have a conversation with, because at that time I also reached out to someone at Camry. It's a senior person, and we had a conversation that whole week before I went to Kenya. I was like, I'll be in Kenya for this period, and if you really don't mind, I can steal 30 minutes of your time. Just tell me about what you do in terms of research and all that. Simple, plain. I wasn't asking for a job. I was just have a conversation, you know. One upcoming scientist to a senior scientist. You know? So I don't know what happens within our institutions, but on the day when we were supposed to meet, I fueled up my car, drove all the way to Camry, up there past Ngumo. Is it Ngumo Estate behind there? Yeah, and this guy didn't show up. And when I called, he said he was he had gone to the farm in Eldoret.
Mm.
But he promised that he will be back the following day.
Mm.
So I went back the following day, and he said he was late to come back to Nairobi, but he can send his PhD student to talk to me, which I was grateful that he was offering. But then the PhD student also didn't meet me. He actually said that he was doing something in the lab that was going to take the whole day. So that's not even giving you an option to rebook. It's like, I'm not available today. Thank you. So those are the experiences you get sometimes as a returning resident, trained abroad, ready to even just have a conversation, start a conversation. That's a reception you get.
Why do you think that happens? What have you heard? What do you think happens?
Not what I've heard. I'm lucky that most of the people that we were having these mature conversations with, and the people that we also work with now, I mean, people like Professor Stephen Runo, they have the, I think it's because also they have experienced life abroad before re-entering our Kenyan market and then establishing there. But then they understand that sometimes a conversation is just that. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
And when things get to be serious, you're supposed to talk about research and all that. We also understand the boundaries. But then I think some of the researchers in our institutions, when you send even your CV, people start getting intimidated. And they don't want you close there. I'm like, there is enough opportunity for everybody, but I think some people feel threatened.
They don't want you.
Yeah, there is an Africa is a young continent in terms of research, in terms of growth, and if all the funders and everybody they are putting their resources to fund research in Africa, it's the frontier. So why does anybody think that if they give you that opportunity to even start a collaboration or start a conversation, that it's a bad thing? And I respect some researchers. Like I didn't know Professor Imungi at the University of Nairobi, but I made an appointment and he actually graciously just had a chat with me. And in the end, we ended up saying, like, if we ever have a research program that is aligned, I'll be happy to even have some of their students and all that. But
yeah,
people don't value the importance of having these conversations.
Yeah, that will actually give collaborations or create a space for collaborations and growth for everyone.
Yeah. And then there are funds that require that you have collaborators from a certain region or, you know, just having this conversation. I can know of an Australian funding program that requires support from the African institutions. Guess who is the first person you're going to call?
That person you had that conversation with.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's interesting. Hey, so you haven't answered my question, really.
Yes. Which question? Would I come back?
Yes.
At the moment, no. Eventually, yes. When I think, I can't give you a timeline because, I mean, at the moment, I have a family here. And my son doesn't know anything else besides Australia, which is a big factor.
Could be a huge.
So before I even think about myself, I have to think, how am I affecting him?
Mm.
And unless I have some kind of project that is keeping me there for like 5 years, you know,
mm.
and then, as I said, it's quite difficult to always be uprooting your life, you know, for science, not knowing. Yeah. And when you actually know that you want to be in a place longer, you've taken your mortgage, you have your family, then it becomes a conversation of more than just you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is that the nomad scientist concept you're telling me about earlier?
Yes, as a nomad scientist, is the moment you take that flight from Nairobi, you basically don't know where the next stop will be. I know of people who started from the UK, went to the US, and then ended up somewhere in Western Europe, you know.
Mm.
And like the likes of me, I started from Nairobi and the Netherlands,
mm.
and back to Nairobi, and then the US, and then back to Nairobi, and then Netherlands, UK, Netherlands, Australia.
Switzerland for some time, for 1 day or two.
Yeah, so you're basically a nomad, because
mm.
your cattle is the science, but then
mm.
science is also unpredictable, especially mm. academia. It's becoming so competitive and so unpredictable. So
mm.
you become a nomad scientist, as opposed to the helicopter scientists. Those are the ones that land in Africa. They use you guys to correct data, and then they disappear with the results. They don't remember you in the...
Yeah.
In the publications.
they are the first one. They write, someone who's not even in the...
Yeah, so they write a story.
Hmm.
They write a story about healthcare in Kenya.
Hmm.
They don't live in Kenya. They never had research interests in Kenya. So they basically came to Kenya to collect data, or they used local scientists to collect mm. data,
mm.
but then this data is processed abroad, interpreted mm-hmm. abroad, mm-hmm. and concluded abroad
without any input from
without your input, the people on the ground. Yes, those helicopter scientists.
Are there other types of scientists? There's helicopter. There's no more. Is there another kind of scientist?
I don't know. I know of those two for sure.
What is the main reason why scientists are more nomads?
I think mostly it's funding.
Mm.
Nothing else. Because if you don't have your own funding and establish your own lab,
mm.
then it means you're depending on someone else to get funding and employ you.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and where that's the case, then you will most likely be moving from one lab to another, but then you have no control where this lab will be. You only have control of your niche domain,
mm.
you know, your specific research interest.
Mm.
Yeah, so you actually have less control on where you will land,
mm.
but then you have control of, like, I want to work with pathogens, and I want to work with pathogen host pathogen interactions. So that's your niche domain, and anywhere that is available, that's where you're going.
So what do you think can solve this, because it actually affects your life in one way or another, right?
Yes, it does. So the mm. first one is if, like, talking of like our governments, we just need at least government to put in a guaranteed part of the budget for research,
mm-hmm. mm.
for R&D, like no excuses.
Mm.
And when that happens, then you will have this crop of scientists
mm.
that don't have to wait for the Wellcome Trust to put in funds for them to be researching malaria. There is always a part of our government fund like the CDF, you know, that is revolving yearly, and it's channeled towards the research and development. And then, so that will reduce the movement. I mean, it will attract talent, but then this talent is more likely to stay because there is a guaranteed funding. I mean, I don't say people become complacent, but I'm saying people will kind of have something more structured and something more determined. Is that the right word? I think they will have something more stable to look forward to, and that will kind of create an environment for people not to be nomads. Because it's the same as our institutions for higher learning. You get somebody teaching from Kenyatta University, and then in the afternoon they're in Nairobi University, and in the evening they're in Machakos University. And some of them even drive overnight so that they can catch a class at Maseno before finishing up at Kisi, you know. And all this is because if you haven't paid somebody enough, or you haven't created a stable environment for them to be having a stable impact, then they'll just be walking around and then moonlighting, they call it, or moonlighting.
Looking for opportunities.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you'd like to add that you feel like we haven't talked about? Yes.
I think the part, it's because we didn't really expand on it, because you asked me about what it feels like to transition from a Kenyan institution to like another institution abroad, and in most part now, going back to even the kind of, you know, once we go through these channels, you get to tell others that this is the way to follow to get to this scholarship, or this is, you know, this is the route to this end. And which is mainly what we do here now when we're having this conversation, because somebody be like, so how do I get there? So the thing I noticed with many of our fresh graduates, I don't know if it's for the lack of knowledge or just for just people being lazy. Our students don't do their homework at all. And there is nothing like a PI out here will hate most, like a student who comes unprepared. Made before an interview or for an application. You know, the moment I ask somebody, can you share your CV so that I can help you, like we can start a conversation there, because I don't know this person, I've never met them. So the only way I can get what they are about is to get their CV, go through their LinkedIn profile or their professional portfolio. And you are an undergraduate student or graduate, fresh graduate, sending me an 8-page CV. You know, I take a step back and I'm like, what kind of joke is this? My CV is 3 pages. I can make it to 8, but it's 3. It's 3 for a reason. So. And then you tell somebody to kind of give you like a concept or a motivation letter or anything, and they're like, can I borrow yours? And that's a reality. And that's 90% of the people interacted with. Can I borrow your motivation? How did can I see what yours looked like? Can you send me yours?
Wait, you're the one looking for a student, right?
Yes, and I'm the one trying to guide somebody. I'm the one guiding somebody to, like, apply for a scholarship or apply for admission, you know, anything.
Yeah, and okay, so...
And then from from the first two or three interactions, they have already shown you that they are ill prepared. So that leaves you with all these questions, like how are they going to survive even the program, you know? Because a motivation that you should, the correct answer will be like, okay, give me a minute, I think about it and I write it, because it's your motivation. Whatever makes you wake up in the morning every day, all week, and then you go through the year waking up every day before seven and be ready for the day. What is it that drives you? So that I guess it's the kind of conversations we might want to start having with our undergraduates or even master's graduates. And just people to understand the basics of looking for an opportunity. And I don't mean tamaking. I mean just applying smart out, apply for a scholarship and somebody give somebody an opportunity to read your CV twice. That first they go through and they're like, oh, interesting. And then they go through now to actually get what is it you're about. So that is that. And then...
We lack that, is it exposure or training or what would you call it?
That's why I said, I don't know if it's for the lack of knowledge or laziness. It can be outside, outright laziness. People just don't want to do their homework. And I think I'm more inclined to that theme of like people just being outright lazy because of the things that people tell you to do for them. People don't approach you and ask, how can I get a scholarship? They say, can you get me
a scholarship?
And in Swahili, it actually sounds worse. It's like, unaweza nitafutia ka scholarship. So then it becomes ka.
I do want to laugh.
You know, they diminish your input, they diminish the importance of whatever it is that they want you to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you ask somebody, okay, I will help, can you send me your CV? They take 3 days to send it. Well, I can understand if the internet was slow. But then when it comes, you first have to take it through the editing process and you tell them, can you remove this and that and this? And they're like, I'll take a look. And then they go for 2 weeks and then they come back. And I'm like, why are you serious?
Is it because a disinterest?
No, people are not ready to... I think that there is a lot of like instant gratification maybe. You want things to work instantly.
Oh, yeah.
And then you don't want to put any effort in making them work. So I could think of like when we were applying for scholarships, that's a whole year process. It's not a 5 month or 6 month thing. It's a whole year process because if you require an admission letter to apply for a scholarship, your admission as an international student, the deadline will be somewhere around February, right? You get your response in May, June-ish. And then now you start looking for funding from that opportunity. So just applying for the scholarships and doing all the paperwork and waiting. So basically, if you're anticipating to start in the fall of next year, you have to start applying this year. So it's a whole year process.
Yeah.
And there are no two ways about it. And then you tell somebody, this is the process, we're going to do it this way. You start and then you're halfway through, they disappear, you know?
Yeah.
And then 1 year later, you know, they have tamaked and they realize that first class is not going to help. Then they come back again. And then at that point, you're not even willing to, you're not ready to help anymore because that opportunity is already gone. And we have had people, even when something that is assured, you tell somebody, this is the opportunity that is on the table, Can you bring this and this and this within 3 weeks? They do the Kenyan way. You know, they wait for the last minute. And when they are scrapping around all the things that you asked for in the last minute, and then they're trying to send them to you, forgetting that there are time differences and all that, by the time they get to you, you're 1 day past the deadline. They didn't even check the time zone. Yeah, so I guess when it comes to career conversations, we need to first tell our students, our graduates, to just be serious with just life in general. Just there is nothing like instant gratification. So you just, like when you get your ID, you should get your passport, and then when you finish your college and you start anything, you should be updating your CV as it's a breathing document.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I'm employed on a 5-year contract, I'm still revising my CV almost every few months, you know, because even the things that you've done, the skills you've gained within that job, they need to go onto your CV. And if they're surplus, you need to have a trickle down to a professional profile like LinkedIn, you know. Yeah. So that's unrelated to our conversation, or at least attached a bit to, like, my journey, but still it is something that needs to be said.
Yeah, it is an important, because it's still part of what you're currently doing, though it's not like official. It's something it's important to talk about them.
Yep.
And I think, yeah, it is coming from that shortcut kind of thing. Like, you think, if I do this, I'll get this. It's something simple. And also, like, the sense of time, too. Like, people don't really...
Yeah, but sometimes there's no clear end, you know, there's no clear end in sight, you know, you're just doing something to take that first step. Anyway, I guess I've taken too much of your time.
No, not really. No. No.
No. So, if you want, you can switch back to that Zoom thing for... Our bye bye. You have a lot of editing to do.
I actually don't really do a lot of editing. I enjoy the authentic conversations. Yeah, but the clipping back the conversations.
Yeah, so the cuts.
That one I'll have to do a lot of those.
All right. Let me see if I still have that Zoom link.
Let me, I had whatever I did. Anyway, thanks for coming in. It's nice to have these conversations because, you know, every day I learn something new when having these conversations with people, people who are ahead of me or whatever, have experienced something else in their career path. It's an interesting